Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, speaking to you live from my studios in Washington, D.C., Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed, speaking to you from Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Fredericksburg, Virginia. Brother Aziz, welcome to the show. Glad that you could still come on with me. And of course, we're going to we're going to put our topic this evening is natural disaster preparation and how it could possibly save your life. So as soon as our sister come on, we'll be going directly to her, giving her as much time as she possibly needs, because these are disasters that we're going through. We need Almighty God and all the scientists and experienced representatives that we can possibly get to tell us what's going on in our societies. Is our very nature getting ready to end, because I'm saying the disasters that we're having, but hypothetically to see the disasters that could possibly occur, especially with all of these all this melting of the ice and the North Pole. So we are living in a world of uncertainty, and we need as many experts when it comes to our climax as we possibly can hear from. So again, our disaster preparation and how it could possibly save your life. And Sister Abdu Ali will be coming in to to inform us all. But in the meantime, Brother Aziz, we will continue our conversation on the power. At least myself, I am not going to get over and not talk about the power of the black dollar, because our black dollar is very powerful. We just have to have put together a business plan as to where we can manage our dollar and circulate it back in our communities again. But in order to get that circulation going, we must have financial institutions where we can deposit our monies. As long as we have to deposit our monies into a white supremacist bank and have them being to better their livelihood, and we just don't see our monies anymore once it goes into those banks. And the monies that are, and the monies that make monies, see, that's the banking system, is the money, your monies, and your monies is making monies. That's what we don't see. Oh, they give us that little 2 or 3% return for putting our monies in the account, but they're making billions of dollars in returns on that money's making money, and that's that circulation of monies. They're circulating our monies. We cannot, but they're circulating our monies back into their own communities. And, of course, we have integrated into the communities, but were not a part of the production. You see only white businesses, white banks, white everything that your money is buying and paying for. That's just to let you know, there is statistics that are saying, and I'm not surprised, but statistics are showing that when it comes to consumer spending this year, the black dollar by African Americans is projected to spend $1.9 trillion just alone in consumer spending, not to add on the monies that go into donations from our communities, especially in our churches. And the large amount of monies that we donate, and that also goes into the Caucasian. And that is said to be close to $1 trillion. So when you start talking about the power of the black dollar, brother, we have a very powerful dollar, but it's circulating in someone else's community other than ours. And that's what we have to, again, put together a business plan as to where those monies would indeed be circulating back into our communities. Brother Aziz, I do see where Sister Aisha, I can see her coming into this, a studio. And,
okay.
Like for you to introduce yourself, make some comments, but I'd like to get to Sister Aisha as soon as possible. So, Brother Aziz, that's my little few minutes of opening. I will turn it over to you now.
Yes, thank you, brother. And what I wanted to say was that primarily I was looking forward to Sister Aisha coming on, brother, because she has more to say than I do, and I got a lot to say about what she's going to talk about, because we are in the situation where we need to be prepared for these climate changes that's coming and the disasters that's coming behind them. So I'll turn it back over to you, brother, so you can introduce Sister Aisha Abdul Ali to us, brother, and thank you.
She needs no introduction. She's one of us. She hosts the 8 o'clock show. But Sister Aisha, are you with us? Maybe I was wrong. Maybe Sister Aisha didn't come on. I thought I saw her number come through, but we'll still be awaiting her as she arrives. But in the meantime, Brother Aziz, I'll come back to you, and now you can you have your opening comment.
Well, I wanted to say to everybody listening, you know, I've been out of contact with everyone, been busy taking care of personal affairs, and hopefully I can get them taken care of and get back into the business of the day, and that is where my heart is, and that's with Brother Bilal on the matter of helping bring black businesses back into our community, networking black businesses, letting African Americans know about businesses that exist that they can support by either buying the product or contributing to the business in the sense of maybe wanting to be a part of the business if that's possible. But all of these options, this is what we are constantly promoting. We promote these ideas here at the new Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. This is what we promote, networking businesses and introducing new businesses, and also giving opportunity for people that want to go into businesses to come on our program. And we have the resources as well as the contact to help you establish your business, to give you the information you need to know, put you in the right direction to get your business established, and also give you advice on how to grow your business. And we've been doing this for a while. This show has been going on for 8 years, and Brother Bilal started the show actually probably about almost a year before I came on the show with him. And I was in a halal business, meat and poultry business, which I still am certifying halal products. But Brother Bilal was the business committee, president of the business committee at Masjid Muhammad in Washington, D.C. So he's been at this a long time, and this program, he's had this program on for a long time, trying to promote African-American businesses and to get them to network. And a lot of times on our program, we have zero. Even though we put out the bulletin for all over in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Richmond, Virginia, all over the country, and we find that a great majority of our listeners are from the continent, the motherland, Africa. So we take great pride and love in knowing that our brothers and sisters over in the continent is listening to us, as well as we have people over in Europe listening to our program also. So, you know, what we're trying to do is, you know, we got our brothers and sisters in other places listening, but it's very important that we start getting more listeners on our program here in America and what we're trying to do. We're not really asking you for any money other than being a member and enjoy the membership privileges that we offer to you, not only our shop where you can go buy products from the different people, the sponsors that that are members as well as business people, but also we have where we offer you all the advice that you need to get a business started in that. So we look forward to any of you African-Americans that are here, listen to us, that are here, to tell others about our program, because as far as we know, we're one of the few African-American radio blog talk shows in the country that are always promoting African-American businesses and trying to get them to come together to do business with one another, especially in the Washington metropolitan area. You know, and we're not disappointed that we don't have the millions of listeners that we thought we would have, because we've been working on it for, like I say, 8 years. But we look forward to continually working on it, and maybe we'll reach that goal of a million viewers or listeners, as well as getting members to our program, because it's a worthy program of African-American people, as well as people of color, listen to this program and finding out ways and means that they can network with one another in the business world and help one another. You may have a business in Africa. You may have a business in South America somewhere, El Salvador, or wherever. You want to get a business going here in America. You want to network with someone that's got a like-type business or has the business that would carry your product over on this side in this country. This is the type of networking that we try to promote in our show every week. So those that are listening, tell those that you know that are not listening about this program that we have on, where we try to promote businesses, network businesses, from Africa to America, from Europe to America, from South America to America. Wherever you be, that's what we want to do when we promote African-American business. But our mainstay, brothers and sisters, is promoting African-American business here in the United States of America. Whatever city you may be in, wherever you may be, and you want to have, you got a business going and nobody know about you, they can know about you. We used to have a book out when this country was extremely racist. it's a little bit above that extremism now. It's not extremely racist anymore. It's just racist. But we used to have a book out called The Green Book. And this Green Book told us about African-American businesses and places where, and hotels, primarily hotels and places where you could stop and get something to eat when you were traveling through the country. Because wherever you were traveling through the country, especially down south, they had black and white signs saying black and white. Yet still today, they don't want that history taught of how nasty, how negative they were. And on top of that, asked us to worship like they worship. All this type of stuff that we had to go through. That's why the Green Book was put out there, so that at least some of the comfort that people would have when they were traveling from place to place, that we could enjoy that. We could stop by a restaurant, perhaps, get something to eat, and maybe, you know, it was a convenience store there at the place to eat also. Get something to eat and stock up on some supplies, and maybe a place where we could stop and spend the night in the motel or whatever that was for blacks. That's when we had money in our community. That's when the money circulated during integration, when we had extreme racism in the country. We were able to put our monies together and circulate in the community, and people in the community were doing good. They were doing way better than they would have done out there trying to, in the regular white business world, trying to make a living for themselves. And this is the kind of community life that we want to bring back. We want to bring this back and let this redlining that's happening in our community and all these immigrants that's coming from the Ukraine and other places, Mexico, that the United States are letting come into this country. They are deliberately and intentionally putting these people in African-American communities where the real estate is not value isn't that high, where there's vacant properties around and that. That's what they're doing, Brandon, because our community was already redlined, where the people that live there can't get the funding. As Brother Valla said earlier in the program, we have these banks, these white banks in the community that don't loan nobody no money, but everybody in the community is taking their money there, putting it in there, while the bankers take the money out of the community and take it over to the Caucasian neighborhood or the European neighborhood and watch that grow and blossom and have everything, while the other community, our community, across the tracks is deteriorating. Why? Not because the people won't take care of it. It's because they can't get the funds to keep the community up, upgraded like it should be, upgrading their homes, restore properties or buildings in the community that need to be restored and rent them out, you know. So this is what our show is about, bringing that type of network together wherein we can bring some real life back into our community. And what I mean by life, business activity. That's the life of a community, business activity. Not that just people are living there in the houses and that. That's not really the life of the community. The life of the community, the activity, the business activities that's in the community that keep everybody supplied with the necessities that they need for everyday living. So, once again, you know, for those that's listening, let those that you know that perhaps don't know about our program inform them about the New Africa Black Belt Business Association, Washington, D.C., and the many, many great opportunities that they offer. We have lawyers. We have attorneys. We have accountants, CPA accountants, not just accountants, CPAs. And then we have other professionals, like our next guest will be on the climate control and that, Sister Aisha Abdul Ali. A professional when it comes to climate control, sponsored by NCOAA, as well as a FEMA consultant, a FEMA, primarily FEMA, that know about the upcoming and advisories that we're having from the National Oceanic and Weather Atmospheric Administration about the disasters that's coming. It's something else when you don't know a disaster coming and it takes you, you know, it shocks you. But we know about disasters are coming, and it's just when they're going to come. We got an idea how they're going to come in many different ways. The heat wave that's sweeping the west right now is drying up places where water levels are very low in a number of places. The very thing we need for life on the planet, water. So, and this is happening, and people are not prepared for it. And we got great migrations of people leaving those areas coming this way. So it's a lot has to go on with the way people do and conduct themselves now that will prepare them for these disasters that's coming about, and especially us in the African-American communities. We are far behind in the preparation scene and a lot of the other communities. So, you know, this is my message for the opener for the night for me, Brother Bilal.
We definitely appreciate your words. But like I said, brothers and sisters, I am not going to speculate too much into my topic. That is, it's going to always be the power of the black dollar. And I am going to go to Sister Aisha, but before I think I see her number in here. I think she's I think she might be with us now. Before I go to her, if her daughter is with us. Sister Aisha, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I am. And I think my Madam Aisha is with us now. Abdul Ali, are you? Is your connection good?
I'm sorry. No. As a matter of fact, I am going to turn it over to you for a few moments and see what you're bringing us.
Okay. Great. You know, I've been listening in to what you and Brother Aziz have been saying. I'm telling you, it's been phenomenal, as always. Thank you so much for the information that you all share. Coming from a younger generation, I want to emphasize that not only is the message that the Black Thought Walking is promoting, but also this message is also evident on social media. So, if any of the listeners are on social media, whether that be Facebook, whether that be Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, you know, there are Black-owned businesses, there are Black-owned advocates, Black-owned business advocates out there making the same statement that we're making. I'm not going to name any right now. I wouldn't do that right now without vetting with the rest of the team. However, there's so many out there that give that message, and if there is someone within social media that you connect with as far as the message that they're giving, please listen to what they have to say as far as how to advance your business publicly or how to promote your business or how to establish one and all the protections that you can have in order for your black business to thrive and also how to promote other businesses, because the awareness of the history that we have first is, of course, it's abundant and it's prevalent and it's known, right? So we know in our history, but also applying those same strategies and principles that we had during the time of segregation or even before then regarding amplifying the black-owned businesses. But we can still apply that today. So in addition to what we're doing here on the radio, there's other avenues for you all to become aware and better informed and strategies and given techniques to amplify the awareness of black-owned businesses. You know, I think that it's important for us to identify that the information stays the same as far as the message, but the way we receive information, right, the different tools that we receive information may change, but it's still there. I'm looking forward to listening to Madame Aisha Abdul-Ali regarding disaster preparedness, and I want to emphasize to the listeners that Madame Aisha is speaking about disaster preparedness, not disaster awareness. There is a drastic difference between the two words, preparedness and awareness. There has been enough awareness given for the past 2, 3, 4 decades about climate change. It is now time, it's been overtime for preparedness, putting in action what needs to be done in order to be prepared or in order to be put into a place to where you're not left unprepared, right? And that's what her message is going to be about. It's vital. And I want to give an example of it. And this example hits close to home because it happened not too long ago. If we all can reflect back to 2020, when the before the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic hit the United States, we were able to see, coming from starting in China, starting in the far, far east, the wave of the impact of the virus. We were able to see that in real time because the news definitely broadcasted it constantly. So from the time it hit one part of, one continent to another continent to another continent, and it was quickly coming in our direction. The administration in the West, in the United States, intentionally did not want to be prepared. We were having the awareness because we watched the news. We had the awareness that was prevalent in between what was televised, what was on social media, friends that we knew, you know, close relatives that may have lived abroad. We knew it was real. We were very much aware. But our communities, our country, intentionally did not enact preparedness in what happened. When it did hit us, the impact was devastating. And it wasn't because we didn't have enough. It wasn't because we weren't watching other countries going through it and they were showing us what was working and not working. It wasn't because of that. It was because of the lack of preparedness. And so a lot of the changes that needed to be made in order for us to overcome the damage and the destruction and the impact of COVID-19 was due to the fact that we weren't prepared. So with that being said, I hope Madame Aisha has her connection working out right. If so, looking forward to listening in and hearing how we can be better prepared. So I hand it over to you, Ms. Abdul-Ali.
Again, brothers and sisters, without further ado, I am going to bring on Sister Ali and Sister Aisha, and she will, she'll be bringing us a message, and Sister Sasha, I'm telling you, your introduction was a beautiful introduction, because it goes so much with our title this evening. And our title this evening is a disaster preparation that could possibly save your life. So with that said, Sister Ali, Sister Ali, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Brother Bilal. Can you all hear me?
I hear very, very clear.
Okay. Thank you, Sasha, Brother Bilal, and Brother Aziz. We really do need to talk about disaster tonight, and hopefully we have the kind of audience that can give some feedback because I want to ask the audience some questions and see if we can understand why our people, in particular the people in the underserved population, are not moving towards disaster preparedness. So let's just recount what took place this past week and still taking place in Lahaina, Hawaii. That was truly a devastating situation, and it's still devastating as they count the number of people who lost their lives. And, of course, the property damage is way up in the billions, multi-billions of dollars, and probably even beyond that, realizing the cost of real estate on that island. But we should not be surprised that these disasters are causing such catastrophic situations for families. Most Americans never thought that they would see families on television in a place like Hawaii, the country, the land of paradise, as it's often called, running for their lives, jumping into the waters in order to survive, and yet still perishing, many of them. They never thought that they would see that on national television. We were actually seeing the event as it was taking place. And that was not a fictional movie. But the important thing is that we must understand that every disaster has consequences. That situation in Lahaina, yes, it was the Category 5 hurricane that was out there in the ocean, in the Pacific Ocean, hurricane that was out there in the Pacific Ocean. We know that it had a lot to do with bringing the winds that, and because there was a severe heat situation going on in Hawaii at the time, the sparks began. And, of course, the wind from a hurricane that was 800 miles away, caused one brush fire after the other. And if you've ever been on that island, you know that most of the housing, they're not brick houses. They are tender houses. They are plank houses, wood houses, fabricated houses. That's primarily what's on the island, not brick homes necessarily, the way we have them here on the mainland, as we're referred to. And so, when you have one spark, you're going to have another spark. And also, we realized and we heard from some of the university in Hawaii, how Lahaina had imported highly flammable seedlings. So the grass and the, not grass as we know it, but the coverings in the yard came from the seedlings that they had started using that was highly flammable. And they knew that these seedlings were highly flammable. And so they caught on fire quickly, and it continued to spread. But the interesting thing about it, the storm Dora, Hurricane Dora, was over 800 miles away. And the winds from Dora continued to ignite a bad situation. And so the wildfire developed. From the wildfires, we are going to expect to see other issues. Like I said, disasters have consequences. From a wildfire, and if you know a fire, if you have a fire outside of your house, you know it's going to bake the ground, the surface of the earth, right? That epic center there. That is called, it's going to bake just like the dough, the crust on a piece of bread. It's going to bake. And as it bakes, it dries out. Is that right? That's what happens with bread. It's going to dry out. As it dries out, it's going to create tremendous drought, of course, but it also has the potential of creating something else, and that is an earthquake. Now, the earthquake, naturally, the first time you'll see an earthquake is on top of the ground where the surface soil has dried out and the earth begins to crack. That's when you see the earthquake. But the earthquake was formed under the second layer in the earth, which is the hypocenter. The second layer, that's where it formed. But what you're going to see initially from that earthquake is the energy coming from the ground, because that soil that dried out from the wildfire is cracking open. So you all, I hope if you don't follow me on this, ask me a question, and I'll stop and then hopefully answer your question. So it's not unlikely that we will not see an earthquake. Also, when we have an earthquake or when we have droughts, we're going to have, they are followed by increased disease and insect infestation, food insecurity, water supply, food, air quality. Now Hawaii has begun to suffer with the air quality from the smoke that was generated from the smoke. Now, it's not just in the Maui area where the air quality is beginning to get to the people, especially the ones who have respiratory issues. The air quality is spreading. There are still trade winds. There are often trade winds on the island of Hawaii, just about every day. Some type of trade wind, and it moves the air, circulates the air. And so air quality is becoming a major issue. So when we say that there is a storm, if you all remember back in 2020, we had a we have Tropical Storm Eta down in Florida. Tropical Storm Eta originated from a hurricane in Nicaragua, and it moved over 2,000 miles to impact Florida. So a hurricane or a disaster in one part of the world has consequences in the other part of the world, not only to speak of disasters that take place in North America, how they will affect not just one part of the country. It can start on the eastern part of the U.S., move to the central, and move to part of the west. Remember, consequences can spread over 2,000 miles. And so these are the basic things, basic information that we have to prepare ourselves for. And the emotional stress is healthcare professionals are beginning to identify the emotional stress on the people, sleeplessness and anxiety. But these are the situations that we're going to move into a new world with. Yesterday, right here in Durham, North Carolina, I did not realize how impactful the storm we had right here in Durham until today. And it was an interesting storm because one block, they have light, the next block, no light, debris all over the roads in one small area, but nothing in the other area. So it's a very strange makeup on how storms are beginning to appear. And these are the issues that we have to be cognizant of, and we have got to motivate our organizations, our large organizations, to supply the resources so their constituents, so their membership, any place in the country, can be trained in disaster preparedness. So before I ask the question, we know that there are so many people, only a small percentage, 20 to 30% of people in the underserved population, and that definition describes us now, who are prepared for a disaster, which means there are 70 to 80% who are not prepared. So why do you think, if we have an audience tonight, a strong audience that wants to participate, why do you think people are not reaching out to be prepared? Come into organizations such as this group and say, we want to be prepared. We want to bring all of our 5,000, 6,000 members to get them prepared for the inevitable. Disaster is not if it happens, it's when it happens. We have to be prepared. So anyone in the audience who would like to respond to why do you think 70 to 80% of our people are not prepared for a natural disaster when information has been out there for years. So I would like to get some feedback. So the question is out there.
Our mics are open, brothers and sisters. If you can hear us at this point, we can hear you. Our mics are open, and we welcome you to the show. Our mics are open. Sister Aisha, I'd like to just start off by giving you an answer. I think we're not prepared simply because we don't know anything about preparation. And that's my first answer to your question.
Well, actually, I think that some of us do. And, of course, I think with our younger people, they know less about it. But we get insurance, and that's a form of preparedness. We buy auto insurance, homeowners insurance, life insurance. That's a form of preparedness. But as far as storms, let me give you a scenario of an experience that I had growing up. I grew up during a time of segregation. In my neighborhood, we had no fire hydrants. And they were not in the African-American neighborhood. So if a house caught on fire, the fire truck would come, and they carried water in the fire truck, you know. And once that was over, then the house just burnt down unless the people in the neighborhood could throw buckets of water on the fire. So we didn't have that. I grew up in an area where we had four seasons. In the spring, we constantly look back at the winter. The winter, we had a major blizzard, hurricane or something every winter. So our lives were centered around preparedness. In the spring, we would look back at the winter and see what went wrong. What could we do better? We would literally count the numbers of people who lost their lives. And the people who lost their lives usually were the seniors and the single men. Interesting. The elderly people and the single men. They had the highest death rate from the storms in the winter. So So in the spring, we will, short spring, we will do our evaluation of what took place during the storm, which was the winter. In the summertime, we put things together. We repaired the houses. We started planting and canning and putting up food, even catching up water, you know. Then in the fall, we would look back and go over our list to make sure that, oh, we've done this, we've done everything. Because we knew the fall was only a short month or so. We knew we were going to have 4.5 to 5 months of winter, and we were going to have many storms. But that is the era that I came up under. Preparedness is something that if you did not do, you were in trouble. So I understand the younger generation because they did not come up during those times. But the baby boomers did, and the baby boomers are not prepared. The millennials are not prepared. The middle class are not prepared. The educated are not prepared. What do we have to do to, and it's just not our conversation that we have, but I talk, and there are very few organizations other than the federal government who's talking preparedness. But when we talk preparedness, there's some, we talk about it, we train, we use some different modalities and training. But there are very few organizations out there that are seriously looking at preparedness.
So if I may, continue with my question, and I thought you just, I thought your scenario brought up something to my mind, and you're absolutely right, and you and I came up during the same time, and everything you were talking about, I can certainly remember, but that brings up, you know, that brings something else to my attention, and that is during the time of segregation, because we're talking about that time, and during the time of segregation, we were prepared for any disaster that you could possibly consider or you could conceive. And but it's after segregation. Integration from the time we was integrated up until now, we don't know nothing at all about preparation. And that's my about not knowing anything, because, again, we got away from that. Well, our leadership, we was led by everything you spoke of earlier, you're right. We was directed. We were shown, and then not only was we shown how to get prepared for disasters, but in the winter times when, like you said, you would there was no grocery stores.
That's correct.
And we survived very well because those who was our leaders, our parents, our relatives, our neighbors, our communities, they taught us preparation. But again, there were so many things that happened during segregation that brought prosperity to our communities. We lost all that prosperity and preparedness when we integrated. And I might suggest that one of the reasons why we lost it, because we lost each other as a community.
Yeah, I do believe that. And I also think I heard something the other day when I was talking to a group of people, they said, we don't want to remember those hard times.
Yeah.
So I said, well, preparedness was part of the hard times, and these people were baby boomers. They said, we just don't want to remember those times. But when we do not remember those times, there's so much good that took place in our lives. Everything was not a hardship. We had some skills. And now those skills, we're going to have to use those skills or learn those skills again, because we're in a time where we need the knowledge. So we can go back and think. Think about what you know. Think about what you know to do when the storm comes. The people in Maui and Lahaina, they were totally paralyzed. They couldn't believe what they were seeing or experiencing. And these are some of their words. They didn't know what to do. We're talking about educated people. We're talking about many of them middle-class people. But they knew they didn't have the, they had no idea of what to do or where to go and how to get there, because some people were in a state of denial. Oh, this could not be happening to us. But the reality is, it did happen, and it's going to happen again and again and again. And right here in Durham, many people, they were just shocked. They're without power. We were without power for 12, 13 hours. We had alternative power sources in our house that we had brought together as part of our preparedness. But there are many people who did not. And in Hawaii, there are many people who did not. So if a storm can affect you over up to 2,000 miles away, don't we understand that we have to be very attentive to what's happening in Maine if we're on the East Coast? We have to know what's going on in other states and other parts of the U.S. because that storm over there in the Midwest, it's going to affect us in the east and in the western part of the United States. So it's very important.
Sister Aisha, this is Brother Aziz. I'd like to go back to when we first started and say what I wanted to answer part of that question you asked at first also. And I thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that. Well, you know, unlike... you know, like you and Brother Bilal, I also came up in the South, and yeah, when I came up, we did everything. We really didn't go to the store to get anything except maybe what they would call light bread to make a sandwich out. Other than that, we canned everything, picked everything, you know, put them up, preserves. I had all kind of preserves coming up. I didn't even know fig preserve cost as much as it does in the store today, because we never bought anything like that. But what I wanted to say was, and given my answer for your question is, well, sometime after our generation, a couple generations thereafter, well, one of the things our generation sought after as time passed and finances got better in the home, what we wanted was modern conveniences. And what modern conveniences did was put us into such a situation to where we were used to having everything modern, and then technology got better and services got better, such as when you had a disaster in the area, you had help there that was able to take care of those things, because it wasn't as great all the time like the disasters we have today. And I think what has happened, besides having the modern conveniences and the media to give you information and everything, people have a tendency to depend on what we would call Uncle Sam. They depend on the government, that the government's going to come and get them. We got the helicopters, we got the boats, this and that to come in that can help us in these situations. And that has changed because the warnings have been given out about being prepared because we can't reach you right away. And people that can't, don't have, they're not prepared in a certain time period passed by, they're going into this disaster mode. And they, you know, they're starving. They don't have food, drink, or water. So that's what I think it is. People got to depend on the modern conveniences and the way the help is being given to people in certain situations, but these are one-on-one instances. When it's a mass need to be done, when a disaster hits the area massively, like in Hawaii, then the help isn't getting there as fast as the people wanted. And it's just, that situation is terrible, and the situation that we have forthcoming can be just as terrible. But
absolutely.
That's my answer to the question that you first originally asked.
Okay. And thank you for your comments and yours also, Brother Bilal. And I think both of you are very much on point with your comment. We are talking about a generational issue of knowledge that we seem to have lost. And I'm not going to say it's just due to integration. I think it was some. Yes. I think it was part of our desire to not have to constantly remember the pain of segregation and slavery. And so we didn't want to have anything to do with it anymore. But we lost tremendous knowledge. Now we're going to have to go back because the world is changing. And man has done a tremendously tremendous damage to the environment. And we are going to pay the price of the greed of man as he destroyed and constantly destroying the environment that we live in. Given that, we still have to live, and we still have to become very aware of climate change, and it's going to affect us in so many ways. But, you know, the more you know about climate change and the more you're prepared, the more empowered you feel, and you don't have as much anxiety about the climate change and about the disasters when you are prepared. Just like you drive your car and you don't have a lot of anxiety thinking that a car is going to hit your car because you have auto insurance and you have homeowners insurance. And so that eliminates a lot of your personal anxiety. This is where we must go as far as being prepared for natural disasters. We cannot, as a people, undergo the extreme frustration and emotional distress that these storms call. We're not going to be able to do it. But if we are not prepared, and I know other days here in Durham when we had the 80 miles per hour winds, I was concerned, of course. But I didn't have the anxiety because I knew in the house, oh, we have this prepared, we have that. If we get the alert to evacuate, we could just pick up what we have and walk out the door because we know where we will go. If the storm is coming from the southeast, we're certainly not going to go to New York. We're going to get as far away from the East Coast as we can. And we know that if my grandson is in school, when an alert comes, my grandson is going to know what to do, and we're going to know where to go get him or pick him up out of the neighborhood into the car and go without thinking. Where are we going to go? We know where we're going to go because we have a plan to get there and to leave. And so when I was talking to some school kids a few days ago, and I said, if I gave them this same scenario, if there is a storm in Florida and you have to evacuate, where would you tell your mother and father that they should go? And so one student said, well, I have an aunt in New Jersey, so we can go there. Or I have a cousin in Mississippi, so we, oh, no, in Alabama, I think it was, so we can go there. And so I said, look on the map. The storm is coming from Florida, going to the eastern part of the U.S., northeast. Why would you go up there to Pennsylvania or to New York? But then they began to think, and, of course, they could look at the map on the wall, and they said, oh, well, we are go west. But these are the issues that you have already dealt with when you go through preparedness training. So I would like to hear back from our audience, because you all are the ones who are responsible for your organizations, talking to your organization leaders. All of us are in some type of organization, whether it's our religious affiliation, our community affiliation, or our political affiliation. We have our clubs. We have our groups. Our groups need to be hosting training sessions for their constituent base. If the people are not trained, and I tell this to the organizers and these group head, these directors and head of these groups, you're not going to have a base in the event of a disaster and your people are not trained. They are not prepared. Your base is going to dwindle because many people are not going to be able to survive these storms. And I think it was clear right in our face all last week, and some of, and still is so with the situation in Hawaii. So if I can hear back from some of our audience, because your opinion matters. And perhaps you can say something to give us more direction on how to get people prepared. If you have an organization, all you have to do is send a text message or call the number and to New African Business Association. Just call or send an email. And we'll get back with you quickly.
Our mics are open, brothers and sisters. We welcome your questions. Again, our mics are open, brothers and sisters. We welcome your questions. Sister Aisha, I want to... several, I really want to, but the more you elaborate on things, the more things just come to mind. But I am thinking in terms, I consider what we're going through right now. I mean, what we're going through right now in Hawaii, I mean, this is, we're being an eyewitness to everything that you're talking about, being prepared for a disaster. But like you said, it's those who are alive, and make it sound diminishing because I know they still count bodies.
Yes.
As we speak in Hawaii, so it's not like I'm not very sympathetic towards that. But for those who we know are alive because we can see that they survived that disaster that is still occurring, this is a perfect example. And I know about your training. That's why I think I can ask the question in the way I can ask it. But those who are still alive, they're not, this is what I mean about not being prepared and not having the proper training that you are trying to offer our communities. Those folks have no idea. And I'm saying you mentioned many professionals that went through this disaster, didn't survive the disaster, and those who have survived. But the ones who have survived it, I don't care whether they're janitors or whether they're professors, none of them have no idea of where I turn to now. I mean, all I can see is the ash. The disaster. And as far as where do I go from here? What do I do? Who can I turn to? I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Because, again, no one is prepared and is trained for these natural disasters. So I am more or less putting together a scenario, hopefully, that one can visualize. And then I am going to emphasize the urgency of your training and our listening to you. That's my That's my point there, and I'll come back as we go along.
Okay. Thank you. One of the things that really stood out and impacted me greatly with the situation in Lahaina, as the people were coming back trying to survey their property, many people were not allowed to come. And then when they were asked to show their identification. Can you imagine that? Of course, I can understand people need to show identification if they're going to claim a piece of property, or oh, this was my home or whatnot. But one of the women that was asked about identification became very enraged and upset, even almost to tears. She said, "We ran from here. I have no identification. How do you expect for me to have identification when we had to run?" This is the kind of information that we talk about in the training. The health professionals, FEMA, the federal government, these agencies are going to ask you for identification. And most people are not going to have identification because they had not prepared and they did not know how to put that. Some people are going to put their package of identification in the cloud. That's on them. But we say put it in a plastic Ziploc bag, and when you get an alert and you know you have to go, pick up your emergency kit and walk out the door, and all of that information is in there. But the point is, this particular woman was enraged, yet she was very hurt because she had to show identification. So she had no way of showing identification. Also, there are insurance policies and most of them, that will not cover an earthquake. They don't cover earthquakes. They don't cover floods. Flood is federal government. Earthquake, I haven't figured out who will cover that yet. I've been trying to find insurer for an earthquake. But they are not covered under your homeowner's policy. Your auto policy does not cover your car being flooded or washed away. It's not there unless you have comprehensive. So how many people have comprehensive coverage for the automobile?
Sister Aisha, if I might, please, excuse me, I just want to add this into what you're saying. I read recently that two major insurance companies, one of them was Allstate, they still will insure automobiles and that, but there's two other major insurance companies, I can't think of the names right now, they're no longer insuring homes in the state of California, which immediately affected over 50-some thousand people in one area, and, you know, and they said it's going to affect others throughout the rest of the state because the companies are pulling out of California, period, for insuring companies. I don't know if you heard about that or read about that.
I did hear about it briefly. I don't know the details. I haven't had a chance to look at the details, but that was brought to my attention. But there are so many changes as far as the guaranteed community, the insurance community daily. They're assessing their bottom line, and it's always to make a profit. And yes, they're going to move. They're going to pull out of California because they're taking too much of a hit. They're going to move out of areas of the country where they are taking a hit, and they are walking away from policies in these states for very small detail situations. And for some people in the states where they have had disaster, it takes weeks on top of weeks to get some identification now because the systems don't operate the way they used to quickly. But if you're in a state where you have thousands upon thousands of people requesting duplicates of their identification, which is a verifiable process. Everything has to be verified, verified, verified. Do you know how long you can be waiting? And the federal agencies cannot assist you unless you can show who you are. And, yes, in fact, you have something with your name on it and connecting you to that address over there. Yes.
Listen, I'm on the radio.
All right.
Get back with me. I'll be off his line.
Okay, cool. I got you.
Yes. Our mics are open, brothers and sisters. We welcome your comments. So sorry, Aisha, again, going back to disaster preparation. Like I said, we can see what's happening. We're witness to, I guess, the worst disaster that could possibly happen in this country. But at the same time, dealing with preparations, hurricane season is just now about to start.
I heard
this morning one of the meteorologists was saying that there are three hurricanes coming out of Africa as we speak. I know our water temperatures on the Gulf Shores and down in Florida and what have you. Water temperature is 95 to 100 degrees. With these hurricanes, three of them, and we don't know if any of them is going to hit land. or will they turn and go off on into the ocean? But with our water temperatures and our climatic temperatures being so high, and I stutter because, like I said, we just saw what we think is the worst, what is at the present time the worst disaster that we have ever, we was able to look at it.
Yes, televised, a disaster being televised.
Yes, but I am just as concerned about what is to come, what is there to come. With our the water temperatures being the way they are, and also another report came out and was talking about the ice glaciers.
Melting,
they have melted to the point where they have melted to the point where the melted part of the glaciers are as big as the United States. You know, like I said, I'm wondering these disasters, and like I said, we're looking at the worst one. But boy, I guess what I'm saying, what is there to come? What is there to come? So that's why having you on, and this title that we came up with, disaster preparations that could save your life. Sister Issa, your training could possibly be saving lives. And we know if this training, for those who don't get it, like I said, look at the look at those who have survived what's going on in Hawaii, and look at how dysfunctional, I mean, thousands of peoples are.
Yes.
So
it's very chaotic.
Yes, and I'm back now to your comments, because I can only have the curiosity, but that curiosity is almost frightening.
Yes, because, you know, the reason I think that, you know, I asked the question, why do you think that most people are not leaning towards preparedness, wanting to get prepared? And one of the federal agencies, of course, we follow the federal agency's guidelines. We incorporate the FEMA, which is the number one organization or federal agency who receives funds from directly from Congress, their guidelines on preparedness. And we incorporate their scenario into our training. But we also recognize that we have to go quite a few steps further. They begin with awareness, and which is great. You must be aware of what's going on in the society, or the storms, the history of storms and storms that take place. And we have so much information on the internet about storms. We get it in the news. We're always thinking about it now. So I cannot believe that 90%, at least 90% of adults in the United States, not to speak of the world, but just in the United States alone, is not aware of natural disasters. I have to think that at least 90%. Would you all concur with that? So where?
Yeah.
Easily.
Now,
yeah.
if we can concur that at least 90% or 70% are aware, and we know factually based on the data that 70 to 80% are unprepared. That's the people in the affected class, and we're saying that at least 80 to 90% are aware. Then that means that we have to go beyond awareness to get people's attention. I incur that awareness is not enough. It has to, with us, we have to believe it. If we don't believe, we don't take action. We take action on those things we believe. How do we believe? Usually, we as a people and most people don't start believing until they are personally impacted, until they start hurting. Or they've been deprived of something. They have to feel it, right? That's my theory on belief. I read a lot of concepts about belief. But there must be something. If we are aware, why aren't we taking action? And I conclude that awareness is not enough. We have to believe before we take action. So I would like to get your opinion and the audience's opinion on that concept.
Our mics are open.
Yeah.
I've been, this information is just, it's so enthralling. So thank you so much for sharing. To answer your question, and then I have a question myself, I think the reason why we don't believe is because we forget very easily. And I think that the way that, I can only speak for the United States, the way that the culture of media moves in this country, they want to take your attention. They grasp your attention in various ways, and they are very good at distracting you from what is necessary and what is needed. So we may have gone through a devastating situation like Katrina, right, or even witnessing what's happening in Maui, and then literally 6 weeks later, the media is projecting images on something else, having us worry about something else. So it takes away from our intention of doing something. It takes away from us remembering that we need to ask and need to be prepared because we just saw the effects of it. This country is very good at distraction and disillusions and making us see what they want us to see. So, but my question to you is, Brother Bilal brought up a wonderful, wonderful remembrance about the hurricane season coming. So what do you suggest, Ms. Abdulali, what do you suggest the step that we should take? And when it comes to insuring our homes, insuring our mobiles, what do we need to do? Who do we need to seek those services from?
I think that since you have a policy, you should first contact your insurer. Some insurers do not advertise comprehensive because the less insurance you have, the less they have to pay. But you have enough where they can still make a profit on you. So first I would say contact your insurer, right? And then if you think you want to get flood insurance, you have to contact the federal government. The federal government is the one that issues flood insurance, okay? And you can just Google flood insurance, U.S. government, and get that, and it'll give you the contact source. For your auto, contact your insurer for your automobile and find out if you can get comprehensive. And and how much it extra on your premium. Some insurance companies don't want to carry comprehensive, and some states require them to carry it, but they don't have to advertise it. Have you ever seen an insurance company, auto insurance company, advertise comprehensive? I haven't. But I would say contact your insurers and find out. And if they cannot give you what you want, then we'll try to, you can always Google comprehensive coverage, natural disaster insurance coverage for my home. And I think it's incumbent upon us as homeowners, people who have property, to insure it, to take care of it, because you might not live in a flood zone. I contacted the federal government about flood insurance, right, for my home, and they told me that I could not purchase flood insurance because when they ran the satellite imaging and all the other stuff that they look at for the house and whatnot, although I'm in a flood zone, the elevation of my house is, it does not qualify for flood insurance because I'm higher up than the street level. But I'm in a flood zone. I'm in a historical black community, Black Wall Street community. People who built Black Wall Street in Durham had a very nice community. I live in that community. And my house does not qualify for flood insurance with the federal government. And so, of course, it's incumbent upon me to shore up some of the things around my house that I think might cause an issue. But I can't get the flood insurance. Comprehensive is for my car. It's way too expensive for me to afford. It would add an extra $200 a month onto my car insurance, which is crazy. Yeah. So contact your insurer. Okay. Did I answer your question?
You did. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Aisha, I wanted to answer that question about why people aren't prepared, and you gave the exact answer. It made me think about it. You gave the answer, but I wanted to tell you I knew exactly what you were saying. You can be very aware of anything, but if you don't believe in what you are aware of, there'll be no activity. There'll be no concern in that direction. So I think what you stated there is people are very aware in it, but they don't believe that it's going to happen to them, or they don't believe it's going to happen in their environment at all. So that's why I think everybody's not prepared. They don't believe it's going to hit them like they see it in other places. Like the people in Hawaii, I'm sure didn't believe that they were going to have a fire that had them jumping into the water to try to save their lives because they didn't have nowhere else to go.
Yes.
When I saw them jumping in the water, the one thing I didn't understand was why didn't they push one of them boats or some of those boats away from the docks and get on out there a little further in the water. And you could hear them saying on there that because they were using their phone cameras and they're showing what was going on. They were saying, well, we hope that before, we're out here too long that the Coast Guard will come by and rescue us, And I said, they weren't prepared for nothing like that because they couldn't imagine that it would happen to them. So
absolutely.
That's more
and
more for us that are. Yeah, so if we think we're prepared, some of us think we're kind of halfway prepared. I think what we saw there in Hawaii is a real warning for us about not thinking it could happen to us.
Absolutely. Thank you. I agree 100%.
Thank you.
So So what we are, and when I ask these questions, I get feedback. It gives us better understanding of the direction that we have to go into in the training, and we deviate from some of the federal information because it's good information, it's no doubt, and it's so much out there. They millions of dollars in messaging, but the messaging is not getting the people on board to become prepared. And, you know, millions and millions, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars. And the language of the individuals who write the message is usually at an academic level higher than most people in the population. Because people in the population are just beginning to learn basic terminology. This is a whole new vocabulary. We never had to use terminology like mitigation, preparedness, readiness. These are the words that we haven't had to use in our vocabulary. So, and we don't use them in our everyday speech, but they are becoming important for us to know this terminology. And so we go over the terminology, basic terminology, that you're going to have to use when you start communicating with your insurer. So this is a learning experience. And I'm very encouraged, even if there's one person that says, okay, well, I want to get trained. Even if there is one, we have to stay on course. We have to stay on course because this is not going to happen overnight as far as getting people prepared. So we stay on course. And hopefully by the grace of God, every Wednesday night, we can say, we'll begin to say 200 people, 1,000 people were trained last week. I do believe this is where we're going to go. And this is what we have to do. We have to stay on course. And, of course, yeah, as we train more people, we are in a position and we have the credentials to train other people to be trainers. And we need thousands of people over the next few years to be trainers. We can train people to be trainers. And that's where we need to go. So we want to train the trainers so they could duplicate and replicate what I do. And these are people we need in our community who are willing to go out. Now, remember, this is not new to us. If you all remember, during the Civil Rights era, we were on the streets going door to door. It was called grassroots organization, community organization. We did it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Door to door, getting people to come out to the community meetings, getting people to demonstrate, to meet downtown and demonstrate. And that's how the movement started. As far as active participation by the masses, it started long before that. But that was a time of active engagement. And I see this as nothing less than that, having to get back into that spirit again. People in the public housing, they don't have a clue.
Right.
So these are the things that we have to do. So, Brother Bilal, our audience is not responding that much tonight, and this was really a discussion to get their input. Input from the audience always make us better at what we do.
Yeah. Yes, Sister Aisha, you're absolutely right. We did have a moderate-sized audience tonight. We didn't have our largest, but we had a moderate-sized. And I like to say a few of them have dropped off. The few that are still with us is that pass the information on to your friends. every Wednesday night from 7 until 9, Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association, is having our network marketing and business identifications discussions. Network marketing and business identification, especially if you are a business person, you can simply listen in to our show. And because of the different identifications of businesses that are being identified on our show, you just might pick up a client, because someone just may hear, well, I need your services or I need your products, and I didn't know about you until I just found out, just heard you speak about your own business. Because when you come on our show, we don't put you on a machine and advertise you. We have you to announce yourself and talk about your own business. So you're making your own presentations to the audience. And our call in participate live on our show, our call-in number is 657-383-1372. Again, pass this number on to everyone, especially business folks. African-American businesses is what we put our emphasis on, but we're willing to speak to anyone in our communities. And our call-in number again is 657-383-1372. And we are, if you wish to go on our website, to New Africa, blackbeltwallstreet.com. New Africa, blackbeltwallstreet.com, .org. And you'll be able to go on our website. You can send us an email at nabassc@gmail.com. nabassc@gmail.com. I am your host, and along with my other two hosts, you just heard Sister Aisha and Brother Razeez and Sister Sasha. We're all at some point will you be hosting this program, but I can tell you whoever is hosting it, they will be bringing you some very informative information. So again, with that information, we still have about 10 or 15 minutes. Anyone who hasn't participated in our questions are in your identification. You're invited to do so now. Our mics are open to you. We welcome your participation. All right. Well, again, yes, so Sister Aisha, I think
yes.
We just enjoyed hearing you. And I know, again, it will be a continuation because
yes.
Like I said, natural disaster preparations that could possibly save your life. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue with that. We have to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we really do, without a question. And I hope by between now and next week that there is not another natural disaster that will impact the lives of people that we have to talk about. If there is and we know about it, we're going to talk about it. But we're hoping that there is not, because the people, the homeless population, they are suffering. Here in North Carolina, I got alerts on my phone, a recording telling me that this library, the number of libraries that was open for as heat centers for the people to come in, and because people don't have air conditioning, So they have to go into these libraries that have now become heat centers so they can cool off. And I said, the good thing about that is that the homeless population can go to these libraries and cool off, you know, even if it's only for a few days, but they can go there. So what's going to happen when cities do not have the heat centers, turn their properties, turn the public facilities into heat centers for the people to come in and cool off? Where are the homeless people going to go? And these are issues that all of us need to be concerned about. And the homeless population is increasing. What happens? We haven't heard anything about the homeless population in Hawaii. And there is a sizable homeless population there because it's a very expensive place to live. But I haven't heard not one report about the homeless. Have you all?
I think one of the reasons you didn't hear too much about the homeless, I was looking for that also as I've been watching, but at the same time, remember, the areas that the fire came through was a very high-income area. So I don't expect too many homeless to be in that high-income area that the fire came through and destroyed the entire community.
And that might be a good point, but one of the things that I learned about the homeless population in Hawaii when we lived there, they cling to the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
They love to live on the beaches or near the beaches, not so much in the populated area. And so you are right. But they are there because that's a historical area, and there are. But we haven't heard anything about those numbers, and we probably will not, you know. So.
No, we will not, and I won't comment because again, my comments would be only speculation.
But that's a good point that you made.
Yeah, because that was their report, is that if the area that it hit was for the rich and famous. And
matter of fact,
those that lost their properties was folks that was considered rich and, you know, living sort of famous. So because I looked, I said, my goodness, I don't see anyone talking about how the poor got out, the homeless folks. But when they talked about the area and the how it was hit the high end influence area, that sort of as far as the homeless, I didn't expect for them to be in that area, especially during that time when the fire came through. Fire came through when everybody was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
We out in the morning. So I don't think, at least that's my reason, that's my, because I look for the very same thing. And
we didn't see anything.
No, go right ahead, Cessation.
No, and I haven't seen absolutely any data whatsoever on the homeless population. And I cannot imagine that there aren't homeless people, but homeless people in those areas, they don't mingle with the population. They stay clear of the population.
Yeah.
So my heart goes out to them.
So they may
so
have,
we'll see.
They may have been spared because of that.
They might have been spared.
It could have been spared because of, but that's just that's the way I see it, because I didn't see from all the reports of the properties that they were talking about were lost. It seems like everybody was a higher class, as you would say, in this country. You know, United States. I mean, the Caucasians have turned Hawaii into what they want it to be, and not so much of what the native peoples would want or can afford.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to talking about this subject again next week, and we're trying to have more of a plan on how we are going to reach out, do outreach to the communities and to the organizations, and we have been working on putting more of a plan together. So hopefully by next week it will be put together and we can move forward much faster than we have in the past with this, with disaster preparedness. So I thank you so much. I'll turn it back over
thank
to you, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz.
Thank
you. Okay. All right. I'd like to just say yes, we will continuously be talking about African communities, our first hour, and we will continue.
Absolutely.
Sister that we're very fortunate to have, the sister. And yes, Black Belt. Sister Aisha, when you start talking about a plan, we pray that you continue your natural disaster plan, and we will continue our business plan. So there are two plans that we're talking about having being put together on this station, and one is a business plan, and the other one a disaster preparation.
Absolutely.
And we will continue those efforts. And we have bigger plans on taking this to a much, much higher level. But we're working at the level we are right now. And like I said, you have the call-in number, 657-383-1372. Spread that information on, and at this time I am going to let our directors give their close and our comments, and we'll be just about ready to close up. Brother Aziz.
Yes, I want to thank Sister Aisha for giving us that valuable information tonight. I personally learned a lot, so I hope our listeners learned a lot. And the biggest thing I learned in our conversation was that it put a little fear in me about being prepared, you know, believing in being prepared for disasters that may come. And one of the important things you said was about having your identification ready and other items ready to be taken and put in your car and moved out with you immediately where you can go, because the monies you can get. And I had a brother that was in Florida and that around that area, when Mississippi area, when the Katrina hit, and he was telling me, had not they had ID, they wouldn't have been able to get just money that the government was giving out to people just to get them started. You just had to prove that you lived in the city and had some kind of ID, and they would give you $600 or $700 to help you out, just move along, you know, just giving it to you. So those are the type of things that you'll miss out if you don't have ID when a disaster, be prepared and have the identification and things like that. especially the ID when you have to move out in a hurry. And that's my comment, and I hope that our listeners got some valuable information and they took it at hand tonight. And thank you.
And just to comment on what you're saying, Brother Aziz, I'd like to remind everybody that Sister Aisha and Black Belt Wall Street already have disaster programs prepared for you. She has disaster kits that contains just about all the information that you would need, not only as far as your paperwork, but also your being able to survive. And I understand these kits are, you can speculate your survival to be at least 3 days or more. So these kits are available. Contact, again, Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association, and inquire about your kit. Again, excuse me. I haven't taken a drink of water since we've been talking, so I think I'm getting a little dry now.
Yeah.
But, NABASSC@gmail.com. Our call-in number, 202-288-5660 or 202-903-7278. And we will be more than happy to give you information on how you can get your survivor's disaster kit. These kits are ready.
Yeah.
They're ready for your delivery. And so all the things that you would need, everything is there. All the things you would have to put in is your ID and some of your other valuable paperwork, such as your insurance and et cetera. But the survivor's kits are prepared, ready. They're ready to be shipped out to you. So, again, Sister Aisha, if you have any departing words that you would like to tell everyone until next week, I certainly welcome your comments.
I only wish to say that we, hopefully next week, we have been a little delayed on getting everything together because of manpower, but because there are so many people who want to assist, but we haven't had the manpower available to work with them, and so we're a little behind. So hopefully by next week we will have website information, coupon information on the disaster kit. Hopefully we will have that ready for next week. So we look forward to having a good audience. And listen, go to your organization leaders and tell them your people need training and preparedness. So we look forward to next week. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
And I like to say that I would definitely appreciate passing the word because, again, we should be at our fullest capacity every week. But the reasons we're not at that capacity are simply because there are many, many that just don't know anything about us. So pass the word, Black Belt Wall Street. And our objective, when we start talking about a business plan, our objective is to bring back the Black Belt. And there's no reason why we can't because, again, when it comes to the money, we are already receiving the monies. The monies just stay in our hands for a period of 4 hours. But when we can circulate that monies by having our own financial institutions, where first of all we can make our deposits into our own institutions, and now we can start circulating the monies to create businesses and grow our communities and those equity values will start growing back into our communities as to where our monies now will start staying in our communities, not for a period of 4 hours, but for a period of 40 months. So again, let's bring back, like I said, the preparations that we used to make, the preparations that we were making during the time of segregation because we were forced to make those preparations. Brothers and sisters, don't let this integration thing put you to the point where you think you have to be forced to bring back the power of your black dollars. So again, with that said, until next week, next Wednesday, every Wednesday at this time, this is Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association. We're saying good evening.
Good evening.